to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay.
Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. My name is host Mike Jokum. Jess joins me while Matt is off on vacation. Must be nice. We are going to get to everything this week, from a recap of Mid-Ohio to the never-ending Alonzo watch, Scott Dixon, Indy Lights news, more stuff to go over this week than I expected on the first off week of this little summer break here. So Jess, let's dive right into it. What did you think about Mid-Ohio?
I mean, what a race, right? Like, that was what IndyCar is about. It was brilliant racing. I know that, Rossi obviously had it wrapped up basically from the beginning, but man, the rest of the field, that was crazy.
So, speaking of Mr. Rossi, he of course came into some hot water again, which seems like a trait that he's fallen into this year, and not that I always disagree with him, but what did you think of the start? What was it, as Wickens called it, a cheeky move, that little brake check, or are you A-okay with it?
I'm A-okay with it. I mean, IndyCar has pretty much always said from the beginning that it's the person on the pole's responsibility to get the field going, and that was his prerogative. So I think it was okay.
Yeah, you know, the replay, it's almost, if you see it in real time, you go, all right, you know, whatever. He slowed down a lot, obviously, but and it's everybody's job behind him to pay attention. And obviously about half the field wasn't paying close attention. And now that Rossi did this, you know, he's setting you guys better pay attention. I'm sure he might use more colorful language than that, but iTunes would get mad at me. So I too didn't have a problem with it. The one thing I'd be curious about, and it's purely from so the pace car goes 55 miles an hour down the stretch. Did Rossi slow to 55? Did he slow to 35? Yeah, obviously we'll probably never know the answer to that, and there's probably not much of a point in debating it, but I'm purely curious from if he slowed slower than the pace car, I can see why people would be frustrated that he did that. But at the end of the day, I don't fault him for what he did. Just more of a curiosity to see if the drivers who called it cheeky had any sort of merit in their frustrations. What do you think?
I mean, I don't feel like he probably slowed down that much because they were speeding up to begin with. But yeah, I think that kind of to your point, he did exactly what he needed to do. He caught the guys basically asleep at the wheel. Everybody's so used to everybody just running as hard as they can that when somebody decided to change it up, they got angry. And I mean, it's always been the leader's prerogative on how they want to start. And I think it was fair.
Yeah. And listen, I'm sure Matt would say at least it's better than Helio jumping the start again. We miss
Maybe.
You. We miss you, Matt, but I'm going to find a way to make fun of you while you can't defend yourself on vacation.
Have a good vacay.
Yeah, right. Must be nice. Moving on, I don't even know where to go, but I'm going to jump into one of the fan questions pertaining to all of the blue flags that Robert Wickens was frustratingly stuck behind during the race. And this question comes from Mark Van Niekerk at M Vanny, VANNIE on Twitter. And for those who didn't hear my Toronto recap, the awesome Marshall in turn one who let me hang out in turn one during the race, you know, right on the concrete barrier, was Mark himself. Mark asks, what are your thoughts on blue flags for IndyCar? At Mid-Ohio, the lap cars of Sato and Kanaan were shown blue flags for too many laps to count and never moved. Should they be strict and consistent in enforcement? And Binder saw a command blue in Toronto from race control, which obviously we talked about as my pitfall last week. So I'll start it off. I know, you know, the blue flag was shown plenty of times for Sato and Kanaan, and generally a driver tries to get out of the way for a leading car, especially Wickens in second place. But Mid-Ohio is a little tougher to get around if you're, you know, you're struggling, or get out of the way if you're struggling. So I don't have any problem with the way it was called. Do I wish Sato or Kanaan maybe just ducked down in pit lane and got out of the way? Yeah, 100%. I'm sure there was a way for them to get out of the way, but do I have a problem that they didn't get a command from race control in this instance? No, because I don't think they were super slowing down Wickens. They maybe caused an effect, but I don't think they were the reason Wickens, you know, didn't win the race.
I'm gonna kind of disagree a little bit. Not necessarily with this particular incident, but as far as the actual question goes, should they be more strict and consistent? Absolutely. You know, we've seen situations where IndyCar has come on the radio and said, if you don't pull over the next time, you will get black flagged. And then we have situations like this where they just basically rode around in circles and never got in trouble for it. So do they need to be consistent and strict? In my opinion, yes. I say two laps, you don't get out of the way, you should be hearing from them. And if you don't get out of the way on the third lap, you should be black flagged. That's just my opinion. I think that they do need to be more strict, just because, you know, we have seen in the past where people try to pull over, they get in the marbles, they wreck. So they need to enforce it a little more. That way, you know, people know as soon as they see that flag, they need to start looking for a good area to move out of the way so that they're not causing a backup behind them, and they're not also putting themselves or other people at risk when they do get out of the way.
Yeah, yeah, I think this goes back to, and I don't remember what our exact discussion was, but it was around IndyCar race control having a clear, concise message on everything. So if I were to offer one criticism, it would be, let's have a clear, concise message so that we don't have to have this blue flag debate week after week. I know it's a tough job, but I think that would, that'd definitely be a step in the right direction here. Moving on from that, let's talk some silly season, 'cause there's plenty of it this week. I don't even know where to start. We'll start with the positive. You know, Michael Shank said during the Mid-Ohio race that they plan to do 10 races next year and then, you know, jump up to a complete season in 2020. Great plan. I don't have a problem with, you know, slowly working your way up. I think they've shown more consistency as the year's gone on, although he hasn't particularly been competitive, but I think they're taking the right approach to that one. Agree? Disagree?
Yeah, I'll agree. I'll agree with you on this one. Which is, you know, it's kind of rare these days that I agree with you on something. But I will. I'll agree with you on it. I do.
Moving on from the probably the easiest news, the big bombshell that got dropped by our pal Robin Miller during the race was the Dixon stuff, which isn't the first time we've talked about Scott Dixon having multiple suitors. As you saw on our Twitter last week, Scott Dixon said, I have multiple good options for next year. I would like to sign a 2 or 3 year contract wherever I might end up, which is interesting to begin with. The fact he says he's got multiple good options. You know, we've heard that Michael Andretti has reached out at one point. Honda really, really wants Dixon to stay Honda. McLaren is interested if they go to a two-car team. Obviously, that's the big news. But I guess the biggest news now, which could really play a huge part in a lot of driver movement, is the fact that Roger Penske wants Scott Dixon. At first glance, can you just imagine Scott Dixon on Team Penske? We know Scott Dixon can win in just about any engine that exists. He's won with Honda. He's won with Chevy. He's probably won with Toyota. I can't even remember back that far. So I'm going to start you with that question, Jess. What do you think about Scott Dixon and Team Penske? Is it insane or is it feasible? And we'll take it from there.
First of all, can I just ask you where Scott Dixon is from?
New Zealand.
Thank you. Yes, you got it right. High five. Okay, moving on. Yes, I can totally see it being feasible that he would go to Penske. And my Lord, can you even imagine the number of wins that that would bring in? I think it's feasible. I don't necessarily know that it'll happen because of how many driver moves it would make. Although it could, I mean, you never know. Like I said before, there's so much on the plate for Scott Dixon to move, not just money-wise, but he's got to look at everything here. I mean, this is kind of, you know, wherever he winds up this time is probably going to end up being where he's going to, you know, retire from. And I just think he has a lot more than just a paycheck to think about in this move. So do I see him staying with Ganassi? Do I see him going someplace else? I think it honestly has a lot to do with what they're offering besides just a paycheck, because, you know, they're going to have to offer a car that's going to win. Obviously, yep. Right now he's in a good situation, so it would be remiss for him to leave and go to a team that maybe wasn't in such a good situation, even if they offered a big paycheck. But I think that, you know, obviously Penske coming to the table, that would be one heck of a team. And I think it's possible.
I think there's two things come to mind for me in this situation. One actually just popped up as you were talking. One is how awesome it would be for our buddy Joseph Newgarden to have Scott Dixon as a teammate. I mean, that would launch Newgarden into potential Scott Dixon levels of success even after Dixon retires, just being able to, you know, have that guy as a teammate. Not that his teammates now are anything to sneeze at, obviously. But you know, a couple weeks ago we talked about, I don't remember. Oh, it was when Christian was on and we were talking about this and McLaren, and I said I think he would move to McLaren if the money came around. I think if McLaren offers a ton of money, Ganassi and Penske offer the same amount of money, but it's less than McLaren, I think McLaren is completely out of the picture now, and he chooses between Penske and Ganassi, because obviously at this point in his career he would pick a chosen contender over quote unquote a new team.
Yeah, we kind of talked about this before when the whole McLaren Scott Dixon thing got brought up to begin with. I still could see him going there just because of the history of the team. Obviously, maybe not so much in IndyCar. Yes, they had a history, but I just think that it could be a good fit. Still, I don't necessarily know that he would have quite as good of equipment. But honestly, I mean, look at their budgets. So he could walk away smelling like a rose. So I think it's going to be a lot for him to think about.
Which brings us to the potential fallout of this would be, obviously, Simon Pagenaud is the second most coveted free agent this year. If he leaves, obviously that puts him in a good spot to take that Ganassi ride. You would be my early guess, correct?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think, you know, that would
I think
be,
he would step right in.
I think it would be hard for Ganassi to not want him after some of the drives that he's put on this year, you know, with his whole I like winners thing. Clearly, Bourdais is a winner.
Yeah, Bourdais would be another good fit in there. Bourdais or one of the French guys, Bourdais or Pagenaud would be a great fit. And how did we skip over the end of Mid-Ohio without talking about Sebastian Bourdais' insane race going from 24th to, I don't know where he finished, 7th, 6th, 5th? I don't have it in front of me, but it was up there.
I think it was 6th.
Yeah, so the dude passed more cars than any, probably more cars than he's passed in the last four races combined. And passed cars in the keyhole, passed cars where the announcers were going, he's not going to pull. Oh my God, he just made a pass there. Which obviously you and I were laughing about hysterically during the race on Sunday. But so, you know, hats off to Bourdais for that. Moving back to the silly season stuff, obviously, you know, Bourdais or what's his name? Pagenaud would be a great fit at Penske. So, you know, moving on from those two, still plenty of silly season talk, guys. Let's see what's up next on my list here.
Can we do another fan question?
Yeah, do you want me to pull one up?
I got him up.
All right, go for it.
Okay, so our buddy George.
Thank you, George.
That's for on Twitter. He wants to know, I'm going to do the short one. He submitted a couple, but one of them's complicated, and we're not going to do complicated tonight. We're going to do the easy one. So Justin Wilson would have turned 40 years old this week. And so he wants to know, what our favorite all-time Justin Wilson livery was. And I'll go first, since I'm kind of throwing this out there in the middle of everything without you having time to think. But yep. I loved the Z-Line car. Obviously not like the most fancy or anything, but I just really liked that paint scheme. I thought it looked great on track. So that is my favorite. And then Matt also, he replied that his favorite was Barber of 2011, the charter car. And so what is yours?
I would say the Rolling Stones car that he ran at the 500 with Andretti. The black and red is always a favorite of mine, and the Rolling Stones tongue with the checkered flag painted on it was pretty awesome to see. You know, not the most creative design ever, but pretty sleek. With the second place being, you know, Justin Wilson's CDW car from, you know, 2006, 2007. Only because CDW was my first entry level job out of college, so that car always held a special place for me. Even though I didn't start there until well after they were no longer an IndyCar sponsor. But great question. Thank you, George. Your other question we will save probably for next week because it's complicated and there's already a ton going on this week. But George and I talked about that earlier, so he understands. One interesting thing that came up this week was, you know, the Harding team potentially being almost like a junior team for Andretti. And within the article, it came out that Harding Racing is actually using the 2017 dampers on their car, and a technical alliance with Andretti could help them get, you know, maybe some equipment that they currently can't afford, which is, you know, one, pretty interesting, and maybe accounts for maybe some of the struggles they've had at certain tracks this year, which makes Connor Daly's two races even more impressive because he put on a hell of a show for the most part. And obviously, as we see, Colton Herta is testing for Harding, I believe, in Portland. I think it was today, Thursday, if I'm not mistaken. I don't remember exactly when it was. So that could be kind of interesting, you know, especially if Harding is a two-car team where you have Colton Herta and maybe Zach Veach, and that allows the Alonso technical partnership to come in. There's a lot of really cool possibilities, especially because Michael Andretti wants to have a six-car team in one way, shape, or form. So I think it's awesome, kind of like a Toro Rosso Red Bull thing, but better because it's IndyCar. I'll turn it over to you for your thoughts on that one.
I mean, yes and no. I think it's cool. I think it's great to see teams working together. But at the same time, I don't know if I really want it to be, for lack of a better word, like a training or a proving ground for guys to go to Andretti. I don't know. It's just that's a complicated situation also. I think that there are pluses and minuses to, you know, going either way. I think it would be great for Andretti, but it's kind of like, what does Harding get out of it, other than maybe a little information sharing? I don't know. I want to see Harding do good on their own.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, speaking of Harding, you know, we saw Tony Donahue write this on Twitter that Chase, as in Chase Bank, was potentially getting ready to partner up as a sponsor with Harding. And I can confirm that myself as the official source. Thanks to Instagram stories, I saw Chase walking around the Harding shop. So that is, in fact, a true rumor. And I guess if they're in the shop, it's, I don't want to say likely, but looking good if they've gotten that far, at least. So, you know, getting a sponsor the size of Chase to join your team and the money that they could probably bring would definitely help Harding, you know, not have to be a junior team type thing. So, lots going on with that. I think that's the end of the silly season talk, really. Oh, no, it's not, but we'll get to some of that later on.
Can I throw my thoughts in there on the Chase Harding thing just real quick?
No. Yes, go ahead.
Why? Don't you want to hear my rant? Okay, not really a rant. Just kidding. It's really not. My only thing with the Chase Bank Harding thing is... And again, this is clearly only just my opinion. I think that they're going to have a big name in that second seat next year in order to bring Chase Bank in. Chase isn't going to come in for Gabby. Sorry, Gabby. Nothing against you. You just don't have the fan presence yet that Chase needs to make it a profitable situation for them. So in my opinion, I kind of feel like maybe they liked what Connor was doing in the car. Connor is the reigning most popular IndyCar driver, the fan favorite. You know, quite literally anywhere you look, his face is everywhere. He's got a lot of famous friends. He goes to a lot of, I would say, you know, big time parties and is seen by a lot of people. I think that would be a good partnership. Just throwing that out there.
Yeah, good idea. And we're going to take a break from the news and go to a Stump the Host trivia question that I did not warn Jess about.
Great!
So it's I wouldn't say it's the most difficult one ever, but in honor of my home race in Pocono coming up, Pocono obviously took a break from 1990 to 2012 and came back in 2013. Jess, can you name me the winner in 1989, the last year, and 2013, the first year?
Oh, boy. No. I'll just throw out a random guess here. How about we're going to say Bobby Rahal?
Ooh, close. He won the second to last year.
Dang it. And, I can't remember 2013 either.
2013, I can tell you his teammate, Charlie Kimball, was on the podium as well that weekend.
What?
I'm pretty sure.
No, I don't know. Just tell me. Just tell me.
So 1989 was, of course, now I can't find. 1989 was Danny Sullivan with Penske, an average speed of 170.72 for those who are curious. 2013 was Scott Dixon with an average speed of, at the time, a record speed of average speed of 192. And 2013 was an all Ganassi podium. Dixon, Kimball in second, and Dario in third.
Nice.
So I didn't give it away with the his teammate was on the podium because both of his team, two of his teammates were on the podium. So anyway, you know, still 2 weeks to Pocono, and it's funny. It's, you know, I thought now that we are in this summer break, I guess you can call it, and you know, Pagano's back in his hometown in France. Guys are vacationing and relaxing and getting away. And nope, we still have more news than ever. But I guess that's the name of the game this year. I think if we're going to title this season in book form, it's going to be 2018. Everything is out of left field.
It's the year of what?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it. Speaking of what, obviously we need to cover the Road to Indy news with Mazda stepping down as the title sponsor. At first, I was really, really disappointed, which, yeah, I'm still disappointed, but I thought, oh man, this could spell trouble, you know. I guess the panic button went off in my head without really thinking things through. And before I go through all my thoughts, for those who are wondering, and I know we got a couple questions on this, Mazda is still honoring their current system for rewards for, you know, promotion to through each series, scholarship, that's the word I'm trying to think of, for 2019, and whoever the new title sponsor is, which, talking to a couple people in the Indy Lights field, seems like it's, you know, they have a plan, so there's not going to be any lapse in coverage. The same system will continue with, obviously, some changes that we'll talk about here in a minute. But any thoughts? Did you not really care about it as much, feel like I did?
I don't think I went into panic mode. I will say it was a little bit of a shock, but then when you sit down and think about it, they've been around for 9 seasons now, and that's extremely impressive. And, you know, all you can do as a fan is say thank you, because they really did a lot, and it's just time for them to move on, you know? I mean, kind of sadly, as sad as it is, at some point, the relationships just don't work for both sides anymore, and I think that's just where they are. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing, so to speak. I don't think I went into panic mode, but it is kind of a sad day.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. And obviously, IndyCar and the Road to Indy and The current engine manufacturer who actually makes the engines have all come out and said, we're not going anywhere, which is what you want to see, for sure. Definitely glad to see that. And, you know, plenty of cost reduction systems coming up and extra free testing and whatnot. So the Indy Lights guys, led by competition director Jason Penix, are in good hands. So I guess we should start an In Jason We Trust for the MRTI or the something RTI, in support of Jason and all the hard work that they are undertaking. I don't know if they knew about Mazda leaving, but it certainly caught all of us by surprise.
You have to think that they knew, because the next day they put out their 5-year plan.
Yeah, there's obviously, you know, the 5-year plan, and there's already, you know, listen, we're already talking to a few people about taking that role who are automotive related and not automotive related. So yeah, that's a good point. Moving on, we have another fan question, and I wrote it down and I didn't write down who the question was asked from, so I apologize. I know that's why Matt usually does this, because he remembers this stuff. And anyway, if I were to have any driver race in the 2019 Indy 500 from any series, who would it be? Man, that's a good question. I think the obvious pick is Fernando Alonso. I think the unobvious pick, I would love to see somebody from the sprint car world get a chance. I know Chris Windham's probably 2 years away from getting a chance, because, you know, Ballardi wants him to do the Freedom 100 first. But somebody who's not in one of the current big series would be my blanket vote. Maybe Kevin Thomas Jr. would be another one I'd like to see get a chance in the 500. What about you?
Well, you're making my heart happy by picking dirt people, so I wish you could have seen my face. I was like, oh. So yeah, obviously I would be perfectly content with somebody coming from dirt cars. I'll throw this one out there, because, you know, it would just be fun to watch. Tony Stewart would be a good one to come and play again.
Yep.
And then I really want to see, and I know this is, he's from a big series, but I really want to see Kyle Larson. I want to see what he can do. And, you know, he wants to see what he can do. So I think, and just kind of like it was this year, I think it's just up to Ganassi to finally just bite the bullet and put him in a car. I think that he would do really well. I've seen him drive a lot of different things, and he's pretty dang good at what he does. So I would like to see him come over.
Yeah, you know, Larson's definitely not a bad choice, and I almost went there, and then I thought that's too much of an obvious pick. I need to steal Jess's probable answer on this one. And I watched about 3 dirt races on my computer during a rain out last Saturday, sitting on the couch. Yeah. So watched Kevin Thomas. I know.
Hey, do you know what's going on this weekend? Speaking of dirt tracks,
You know, I've been on the road for about the last 2 weeks, so
yeah.
I am not aware of this weekend.
So starting today and actually going all the way through the 11th is the Knoxville Nationals. This weekend is the 360 Nationals. Next weekend's the 410 Nationals. For those of you who can't make it to Knoxville, I would watch, including myself. It is thecushion.com has pay-per-view. They have it every single day between now and then, or you can buy just the races or however you want to do it. So there you go. If you need to get your dirt fix and you can't make it, Knoxville Nationals.
Yeah, very good point. I probably should have known that, because I was just reading about it earlier today. But There's just so much going on in the IndyCar world, my brain is in overload. Moving back, I guess the other interesting announcement this week to, you know, slightly in regards to helping Indy Lights is the new IndyCar licensing system. And I'm not going to go through reading the entire licensing structure. If you want to do that, go to racer.com. My pal Marshall Pruitt, excuse me, wrote a nice article on it. But I will say this, I think it's a good idea. You know, it'll definitely, you know, obviously we saw Max Chilton just do a year of Indy Lights a couple of years ago, which was the smart move. And immediately people started freaking out going, well, then we wouldn't have Robert Wickens. And we, what if we don't have somebody like Colin Braun, the IMSA driver who's looking to, you know, make his way to IndyCar, when clearly in the article, guys, it states that there are certainly exceptions that can be made. And I'm pretty sure Robert Wickens would be number one exception and allowed into IndyCar. What this is limiting is maybe somebody like my Italian friend Santino Ferrucci, you know, from just paying money to get into the Detroit race. Long story short, if you finish in the top three in Indy Lights in a season or top five over two seasons, I think, you know, you get an IndyCar license, and there's plenty of other exceptions and what have you to get in there. But I think the licensing system is a good idea, and I'm pretty sure, you know, our fiery Italian friend for Santino, who was hanging out at the Mid-Ohio paddock last week, because he said IndyCar is more friendly, can kiss his chances of, I guess it won't be in effect this year, but yeah, his chances of getting a ride next year are probably slim to none now.
I think this has good and bad. Obviously, I've said several times I don't like people who ride by, but on the reverse side of that coin, ride buying has helped a lot of teams be able to put together a program. So I think that it is good and bad. Bad for, you know, the teams who need the funding, unfortunately. You know, there are teams who do need the funding. But as far as getting more quality drivers in the seats, I think it's a really, really good thing.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. There's probably going to be a drawback or two at some point, but overall, you know, definitely not a bad thing. Some late breaking news that popped up on racer.com. Right as I hit the record button, Brian Bilardi's thoughts to the Indy Lights 5-year plan was very positive. The long story short here is he wants to return to the Indy 500 again. He's already talking to teams. He's already talking to sponsors. He wants to expand his Indy Lights team back to three or four cars. But the most potential interesting news in this is he's potentially interested in owning an IndyCar team for more than just the Indy 500. And obviously having Brian on as a guest and having talked to him at more than one race this year, I think he would be a great fit in the paddock. And, you know, his Indy Lights drivers have been snake bitten of late, but, you know, for the most part have had a very good year. So I think it would be a great, you know, addition to get another Indy Lights team up into the big show.
Heck yeah, we can't argue when guys want to own a team for a full season. Like, I think it's great. I kind of glanced at the article. I didn't read in depth, but I did see he is in talks with some teams about partnership type deals, so that would also be good. You know, get his yep. feet wet, yep. And I think it's good. I think that he's got a great personality. He would be a great a great addition to the paddock.
And our final bit on the whole MRTI thing is Andretti's general manager spoke today, said we know two teams considering returning to the Mazda or something road to Indy. I would guess one of those is probably Team Pelfrey. Four road to Indy teams in USF and Pro Mazda looking to move up, and one Verizon IndyCar team considering a move to Indy Lights. And I also read, I don't know if it was that article or another article, that Sam Schmidt was exploring the possibility of re-entering Indy Lights. He still owns the Indy Lights chassis, so we shall see. Obviously, great news, not just for IndyCar, but for the resurgence of a bigger Indy Lights field going forward. Going forward, only two other little things I guess I have on my list here. Oh, three if we want to rag on Robin Miller a little bit. But I put out a question on my personal Twitter about TV ratings, and I know we've talked about this multiple episodes now, but I was happy to see an excessive amount of people, or a large amount of people, reply to me and say, I use YouTube TV, I use Hulu, I use the NBC app, I haven't touched my regular TV in a while. So thank you to everybody who replied to that. I think next year NBC in general is going to do wonders for the TV and TV production. So I feel much better about that, and it has eased my concern. But one funny Mid-Ohio story I'm sure everybody saw: Baker Mayfield, the Browns rookie quarterback, had to rent what he called a boring RV for Browns training camp because the IndyCar fans took all of the good ones at Mid-Ohio. Hats off to every IndyCar fan that showed up in awesome numbers at Mid-Ohio for ruining the Browns rookie quarterback training camp living situation. And I say that as a Eagles fan, and to just make fun of somebody whining about an RV. Jess, I guess there's only one more thing, and I know you and I agree and Matt disagrees, so this is our time to make fun of Matt when he can't defend himself. There was a couple pictures that surfaced about the 2019 F1 front wing. I'll say it's less ugly. There's obviously less parts to it. But it's about 15 feet long. And I still feel like if somebody gets too close to you on either side, or in not necessarily front and back, but if you're close to a guy's tire, you're still going to have bits of wing everywhere. What do you think?
Does it really have less parts? Because I don't know. That picture you sent me seems like it had about 9 million pieces going on.
Yeah, it's got like 9 million pieces instead of like 14 million pieces.
Agree though. I think that especially, not to bring up the halo again, but especially with the halo going on and then how wide it is, it's going to be difficult for the drivers to judge, where the wing is. Because from this picture that you sent me, it does stick out just a tiny bit. There's like a little winglet on the bottom on each side that sticks out past the tire. So I can definitely see them, bumping that piece into somebody else's tire when they're trying to go around, just because they have so much they're having to stare at, so many pieces, and then having to look around the halo. I can see them for sure, breaking those off. I don't know. They're just so not attractive in my opinion.
Yeah, and they might have less downforce, which might help the racing, but we'll save that one for when we actually see it race next year. With that, before we get to the pitfall, obviously, thank you to the guys at Wildfire Radio for their continued support and airing our show every Friday, 3:15 to 4:15. You can check it on wildfireradio.com. Those guys are fantastic. And if you yourself have some sort of podcast, they have more than sports podcasts on there. So, you know, definitely check it out. And obviously, thank you again to SoundCue Audio. Go to soundcueaudio.com and use code PLPFAN, and you get 35% off your purchase, which is fantastic. And you get entered to win a Firestone hat, some Pit Lane Parlay stickers, which I just printed up, and a Jay Fry shirt, if I have one in your size left, and obviously two Pit and Paddock passes to a race of your choice, either this year or next year. You know, if you live in Florida, you can certainly save your winnings for St. Pete starting next year. Yes. And with that, I'll start the pitfalls this week. We'll wrap this episode and we'll end it under an hour. And hope everybody enjoyed this one this week. And you know, please join in the discussion on social media once we start posting everything. And next week we may have a special guest on the show, but I'll confirm that on social media at some point over the weekend, hopefully. And Matt will be back next week, so Matt can you know, throw in some Danica facts and all the other fun stuff he does to give Jess a hard time in the middle of an episode. With that, I know this is a shock. I'm going to pitfall NASCAR, but I'm going to pitfall NASCAR rules. So, for example, last weekend, Kyle Busch had to had his qualifying time thrown out and had to start from the back of the field because his chassis failed inspection. I get it. I'm cool with that. But why a couple races ago, and you know, this isn't the first time it's happened. It's happened this year. It's happened last year. A guy wins a race in NASCAR, fails inspection, and they take some points from him, and they take a playoff point from him, however that works. I don't try to pretend to understand their convoluted playoff system anymore. I just, you know, if you fail qualifying inspection and you start from the back and you fail race inspection, or if you fail race inspection, there should be some sort of penalty other than points. I don't understand how you can still keep a win. It's like you cheated, but listen, you know, you won the race still, so we're just gonna let you go. It's like a slap on the wrist. Like, does it really stop you from cheating in the end? Probably not. So I'm just gonna leave it at that. Jess, if you have any opinions, go ahead, or if you want to jump right into yours, feel free.
I just give up on NASCAR's trying to understand their rules. I feel like it changes daily. But yeah, if you're gonna cheat to win the race and then you're still gonna win the race, well, so follow the rules to qualify, and once you're qualified, well, then cheat all you want. That doesn't make any logical sense to me. But you know, it's NASCAR, and well, NASCAR just doesn't make any sense to me at all. So moving into my pitfall, I'm gonna pitfall NASCAR. and not NASCAR in general. I am gonna be really honest, I don't watch them enough to know if they have like a name for this, but their safety team is who I am pitfalling. Bubba Wallace had an accident at Pocono this past weekend that quite literally I even dropped my jaw on, because it was just so, so hard of an impact. To give you an idea, he posted a picture later on social media. He actually broke the concrete behind the safer barrier. That's insane. Like, it was just an insane hit. It took something like 43 seconds for their safety team to get there after he stopped moving. So he hit the wall, he continued to move, and they didn't get there until after he stopped for 43 seconds. So, like, that's probably a solid minute after the initial impact that they didn't get there. I mean, that's just not okay. Like, if I were a driver, I would be furious with how lackadaisical their safety team is. You know, I know that we have it really well as IndyCar fans, seeing their safety team in action. I mean, you've seen the video, I'm sure, car flying through the air, safety guy running while the car is still flying. I mean, that's unbeatable. And I just to see something like this happen, I mean, it was an awful accident. And to think it took a minute for them to get there, it's, I would, like I said, if I were a driver in that series, I would be furious with the fact that they think that's okay.
Yeah, and, you know, first off, you know, I know I give NASCAR a lot of flack, but I'm very glad Bubba Wallace is okay, and that he was able to get out of the car on his own power, because that was a crazy hit. And I don't even think I need to add anything to your pitfall. I think you hit the nail on the head there. I mean, the safety guy, when I think it was Harrison Scott, was flying through the air in Toronto, was already running before the car hit the ground. I mean, that's just impressive.
Like, flew over him, it seemed like. It was insane.
Yeah, that is doing such a good job. I can't even find the correct words to express how good of a job it is. And I'm not saying the guy has to run across the air as soon as Bubba Wallace's car starts spinning. But, you know, 43 seconds, essentially a minute after he makes contact, you know, is you know, like in Hinchcliffe's case when he crashed a couple years ago in 500 practice and nearly died, you know, this isn't something where you can spare 30 seconds to a minute. Like, this is a life and death sport. No matter what form of auto racing it is, and literally every second matters. So we'll just leave it at that, I guess. And with that, obviously no race this weekend. So next week we're going to try to get a guest on, and you know, not a driver guest, but a guest I think you guys I'm sure will like. He's a good guy to talk to in the auto racing world, and always has some good opinions on things. We'll leave it at that. We'll leave it as a teaser until hopefully he replies to me in the next day or two. Jess, I haven't made fun of you all episode about this, but you do have permission to end the episode.
Yay!
Now.
And guys. Oh, yeah.
And thank you, everybody,
thank you
for listening.
And Matt, I hope you have a good vacation. We'll see you next week. So, everybody else, I'll sign it off now. And guys, keep your lug nuts tight. We'll be right back.